You know, when I was a lot of your ages in high school and middle school, if you would have looked in on my life, from the outside, it probably looked a lot like I had it made. And in a lot of ways, I really did. I grew up right here in Edina. I had a great family that loved me and I loved them. We got along great. My father did very well for himself and was able to provide us with lots of opportunities. We lived in great, big, fun houses and got to go on different trips all throughout the year. We had boats and a place in Florida, and I was living the dream. And something happened to me when I was about in middle school. I started to realize that I could actually leverage some of that to make me feel a certain way. I had the nice clothes, and I drove the nice cars, and I had the nice houses. And it made me feel really good, and it made me feel special, and it made me feel significant. But clothes get dirty and they wear out, and new cars come along, and houses get old. And I realized that those things that I looked to make me feel important and to make me feel special and safe and significant, none of it ever lasted, which made me really understand that it was never giving me the joy I thought it was in the first place. And so after I left high school, I knew when I went to college that I wanted to be different. I didn't have some sort of a plan, but I knew that I didn't want my life to look the same. But after living a certain way for 21 years and letting myself be defined and letting myself look to all these things for comfort and joy and happiness, I didn't really know any other way to live. And so it didn't take me long once I got to college to quickly just figure out how to translate the life I had here in Edina to the university in North Dakota. And it wasn't long before I brought all that stuff with me. And something happened to me my junior year. In the midst of living 21 years of my life this way, I realized that I just genuinely wanted more. I realized that this life that I was living with, clinging on to all these earthly things and possessions and titles and statuses, just really wasn't working, and I tried it all. And so something happened to me that year as I let, what I like to say, I let the Lord have me for the very first time. Now, I'd grown up in church. It wasn't like the first time I'd heard about God, but I let the Lord have me for the very first time. I believe that the Lord was pursuing me my entire life, but I don't think I ever really let him or even pursued him back. And that fall, I started to stick my nose in the Word, and I started to pray and have real conversations with God. And I entered into a new community of believers. And these people were unlike any people I'd ever encountered in my life. Not only did they not care that I had nice clothes and nice things and treated me differently for the way that I looked, none of that mattered to them. And it struck me as strange that a lot of them didn't have any of those things either. And they were genuinely joyful. Have you been around those people that literally just love Jesus so much that their joy is contagious? You look at their life and you think, I want whatever it is they have, whatever they've got, I want it. That's what happened to me that fall at University of North Dakota. And in the midst of all that, I was faced with a very real decision. After 21 years of clinging to possessions and status and clothes and looks and money, popularity, nice cars, fancy vacations, I had to face the fact that if I truly wanted more, if I really wanted this joy in this life and Jesus the way that these other people had him, that I had to let go of everything. Everything that I knew that made me comfortable my entire life, I knew that I had to let it go. I knew that I had to be willing to die to all of it if I really wanted to experience Jesus. And I did. And I experienced the joy of knowing Jesus, and I experienced the treasure of the kingdom in my life like I never had before. The greater church right now is in this sermon series about being a Christian atheist. And I was asked to write an article last month. And I wrote an article about a time in college when I really truly was living fully surrendered to God. It was like I took a blank check and I wrote my name on it. And it was made out to Jesus. And on the line I wrote everything I have. That was the amount of the check. All that I am, Jesus. But as you're well aware, as we enter into following Jesus, we say yes to Jesus, and that is a one-time decision. But walking with Jesus for the rest of your life is a minute-by-minute and moment-by-moment decision that we have to make. And over time, I started to erase my name letter by letter off that line that once I signed so passionately over to Jesus. We all have our things, don't we? That cause us to be 95% in. But we have those things that we cling to, that we don't want to let go of. That we'd be terrified if Jesus really showed up and looked us in the face and said, I really want you to let go of this. Lee, Matt, Corey, this is keeping you from me. Maybe you're a star athlete. Maybe you're the CEO of a company. Maybe you're the popular girl at school. And those things are more important to you than Jesus. You know, as I look at Jesus' life throughout the Gospels, one thing that's very clear to me, especially getting ready for tonight, that yes, Jesus died and he hung on the cross ultimately and paid the price for our sins. But Jesus died many times throughout his life. Jesus died to this idea of comfort as he left perfect intimacy with the Father and became human here on earth. Jesus died to having a great reputation as he stood up, as he stood before people and declared the kingdom, and Pharisees and religious rulers slandered his name. Jesus died to personal satisfaction as he willingly went into the wilderness for 40 days and fasted and prayed. And as I mentioned before, Jesus died ultimately as he hung on the cross and paid the penalty for our sins. Jesus says to his disciples, he says, follow me. You hear it throughout the scriptures. And when I hear that call, and when Jesus invites us to follow him, Jesus' invitation is essentially an invitation for us to come and to die. When Jesus says, follow me, he's asking us as a faith community and a body of believers to enter into a lifestyle of dying to ourselves that we might have what Jesus has to offer. I know most of the faces in this audience. And all of us are dealing with different kinds of deaths in our lives. Some walk through that door dealing with a literal physical death. Some of us have been receiving an invitation to die to things that we hold on too tightly to. Some of us are dealing with the death of a relationship or perhaps dying to a dream. Death is in this community, and it's inevitable. In preparing for tonight, I read a book by a woman by the name of Elizabeth Elliot. And she had this incredible quote as she's speaking about death, and she says this. She says, deeper and deeper must be the dying, for wider and fuller is the life tide that it is to liberate. No longer limited by the narrow range of our own being, but with endless powers of multiplying in other souls. Death must reach the very springs of our nature to set it free. It's not this thing or that thing that must go now. It is blindly, helplessly, recklessly our very selves. A dying must come upon all that would hinder God's work through us, all interests, all impulses, all energies that are born of the flesh, all that is merely human and apart from his spirit. Deeper and deeper must be the dying. In the Gospel of Matthew, there's a story that's gripped my heart over the past year. And Jesus is in a discourse about what the kingdom of heaven is like. He talks about the kingdom of heaven like a man sowing seed. And he talks about the kingdom of heaven like a mustard seed and a net that's dropped to catch fish. And he also says this. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. Then, in his joy, he goes and he sells all that he has and he buys the field. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. Then in his joy, he goes and he sells all that he has and he buys that field. What type of person is willing to sell all that they have to obtain the treasure? I would argue that it's someone that wants more. And every once in a while, Some of us are blessed to know people in our lives that actually live like they want more. There's a girl in the audience tonight that I've come to know over the past 2 years that I've been here at CPC. Kirsty Fino is the senior student leader here. She works with me in commitment class. And last year she did an Elevate. And she's very plugged in this community. And over, I've been so encouraged by the way that Kirsty lives her life. Kirsty is a woman in my eyes that wants more. This past fall, Kirsty was nominated as homecoming queen of Richfield High School. Very well-liked girl, very fun, and very godly. And throughout this year, I was chatting with Kirsty on the phone, and she said that she met this boy. They had shared the same 6 hours. His name's Jarek, and Jarek goes to Richfield High School as well, and he hangs out with the security guards. And Kirsty began conversations with Jarek. And Kirsty was nominated homecoming queen, and a couple weeks ago, they had a dance at Richfield High School. They had their winter ball. And it's tradition that the homecoming queen would come and crown the new royalty. And if you're not familiar with coronations, how they work, set up in a similar setup as this, and the royalty would walk down the aisle and the school's eyes would be on them. And Kirsty decided that there's no one else that she'd rather walk down the aisle with than Jarek. And not only that, Kirsty didn't just walk down the aisle, she had a blast with Jarek at their winter dance. She invited him to be a part of her life in that way. And speaking with Kirsty, this is what she said to me. She said, "It has been more of a blessing to me than it is to him. He's so interested in me as a person, and he actually asks better questions than most of my friends. He has an amazing, loving, and tender heart. He actually gave me a bracelet that says, 'Kirsty, or dreams become a reality one choice at a time.' Kirsty wants more." I love in the text that it actually says that the man sold all that he had in order to buy the field. The man sold all that he had, everything, in order to buy this field. And if the story is true, that the kingdom of heaven is this way, and this man literally sold all that he had, imagine all of the things that he had to let go of. All the things that this man must have had to say no to, the dreams that he had to put on hold in order to obtain the treasure. It seems strange to me, and maybe you've felt this too, but it seems strange to me that the more I seem to have, the more bound I feel. Right? Like the more stuff I collect, the more weighed down I actually feel. The cabin or the boats, the cars, the homes, the popularity contest, that all sounded like such a great idea to have, all of a sudden became so burdensome. I can literally feel the weight of it sometimes. Chasing those dreams we thought sounded so good have turned out to feel maybe a little bit more like a nightmare. This man in this text wanted a different kind of life, and he was willing to let some things die to see that happen. Once he saw and tasted the value of this treasure, everything else in his life seemed so insignificant. Sure, he was selling everything, but what he was gaining was worth so much more than all of his stuff. I love that the text says that the man bought the field. Something about that phrase, he bought the whole field. Not just the treasure, not just the shining jewels, but the man bought it all. Everything that came along with it. In the same book, Elizabeth Elliot is speaking of death, and she says this. She says, "Perhaps it's like the field wherein lies the valuable treasure. We must buy the field. It is no sun-drenched meadow embroidered with wild flowers. It's a bleak and empty place. But once we know it contains a jewel, the whole picture changes. The empty scrap of forgotten land suddenly teems with possibilities. Here is something we can not only accept, but something worth selling everything to buy. And in my case, selling everything meant giving up the self-pity and bitter questions. And when, through a willed act, we received this thing we did not want, then death, the name of the field that nobody wants, is transformed into a place of hidden treasure. In this field that this man bought, as certain as those gleans shake in the background, there's gleans in that field of loneliness. And along with the treasure, there's gleans of suffering. And along with experiencing Jesus and knowing Jesus in a real life-changing, radical way, in a way that would cause us and compel us to sell everything that we have, there are gleans of anger. There are gleans of loneliness, death, suffering, and pain, and all the good things too. We can't follow Jesus like we eat trail mix, picking out just the things we like, the things that we want. It doesn't work that way. And as I read this text, I ask myself the question, what does it mean for us to sell all that we have? Because I don't think that Jesus is literally telling us to go and get rid of all the stuff in our lives, that we should go and empty our bank accounts and liquidate all of our assets. I don't think that's what Jesus is asking us. I don't know that he's not, but I'm not proposing that he is. What I do think is happening in this text is that Jesus is extending an invitation for us to come and to be willing to die. I was driving down Highway 100 a few years ago, right after college, and I was in sales, and I was a young guy, and I was super ambitious, and I worked for the Luther Corporation, and at my first couple months at work, I had done awesome, and I was at the top of the charts. I was in the top two salesmen the first two months that I worked there, and that was awesome. It was great. Made a lot of money. It was fun. I felt really good, but in that 2 months, something started to happen again. Something that I swore wouldn't happen after I had signed my life away to Jesus, that nothing would become more important to me. But in that short window of 2 months, as insecure and young as I was, being at the top became more important to me than following and loving Jesus. Being the best became more important to me. And I couldn't sleep at night. I was anxious. I was nervous all the time. I worked all the time. And I was driving down Highway 100 in the midst of a pity party. And I'll remember so clearly, I pounded my steering wheel and I was crying. I was so upset. And I said, "What do you want from me?" And if I've ever heard the Lord so clearly speak to me, it was like he said, "Lee, I want everything. Lee, I want everything that you have. That's what I want." Jesus doesn't just want some of us. He wants all of us. Finally, in the text, the author Matthew makes it a point to say, in his joy, he went and sold all that he had. Maybe it strikes out to me so much because when I've had to say no to myself, or when Jesus has asked me to let go of things, and I've realized that things have become more important to me than Jesus has, when I have to let go of those things and face those things, joy isn't the word I would use to describe how I feel. I can think of a few other words, but joy's not it. And it's because biblical joy isn't a feeling like we know it. The joy that Jesus speaks of, the joy that comes from knowing and living and being willing to sell everything to experience the kingdom, is a different kind of joy. When Jesus speaks of it, he speaks of joy being the fruit of a right relationship with God. Joy in the Bible isn't something that we can create or manufacture with stuff and things, possessions and status, friends, popularity, athletics, grades, bank accounts, job titles. The Bible distinguishes joy from pleasure and stuff. And joy traditionally comes with a price. And once I enter into that space, however brief it might last of really letting the Lord have me, all of me, do I experience the joy that I've been seeking everywhere else. But it literally costs me everything I have. So I wonder what Jesus might be asking you to die to. Maybe he's asking you to die to projecting a certain image or chasing popularity, the love of money, perhaps sinful anger towards divisive issues like politics, tax, worship styles, or homosexuality. Maybe he's asking you to die for your desire to achieve, or perhaps for providing your kids with the perfect life. When we as a community realize that we want more, imagine the possibilities. Imagine actually being the type of community that has tasted the treasure of Jesus, that has found something so valuable that in our joy, that we would be willing to sell everything that we have, even if it meant buying the whole field. This Lent, we receive an invitation. Traditions have it that Christians and faith communities, that we take these 40 days of Lent and we fast as a community to enter into the presence of Jesus. And when we fast, we're training ourselves to say no to something. Something that we, our bodies or our minds or our souls, our hearts, something that we think we need, and replace that. And be intentional about walking into experiencing and knowing Jesus in a different way. And there's lots of different ways to fast, whether you abstain from one thing or another, or you add something into your life. So I leave you with the question, what will you say no to in order to experience Jesus this Lent?
I was certain that Minneapolis was not where I was supposed to be. In fact, I didn't think that I was supposed to be in the United States anywhere. I was unhappy with my job, and I was looking for any way out. I was moved to Minneapolis and presented an option. I enjoyed living there, and I was presented with the option to move somewhere else in the neighborhood that I was currently living in. And I still continued to plan this long-term mission trip to Costa Rica. But then this option came about and felt completely torn, didn't know where God was leading me. And after much prayer, realized that the desire to move somewhere else and out of this country was in fact mine and not what God had in store for me. So I made the choice to stay here in Minneapolis, and I was not excited about it. I realized that I was completely, I hadn't figured out how to be completely reliant on the Lord right here with everything at my fingertips. So that became my prayer, Lord, teach me how to rely on you. And soon after, I toured the apartment that I was going to soon move into as part of the Urban Homework Urban Neighbor program and realized that it was significantly smaller than the apartment that I was currently living in. I was going to need to downsize some of my things and that all of my clothes were not going to make the journey with me. And I wasn't even sure that my queen-size bed was going to fit into my room. And it sounds absolutely ridiculous, but it absolutely wrecked me. I remember crying to my dad on the phone and all over a bunch of things. And I thought to myself, God, if you are making me stay in Minneapolis, at least you could give me the comfort of my things. And I realized at that moment that the comfort of staying in Minneapolis isn't going to come from my bed or my shoes, but from God himself. It hasn't been easy. Sometimes I feel like I am going to burst out of my apartment, and I feel like I just might go in a rage with the loud music down below. But I'm learning a lot about grace, the grace that God has for me and the grace that I have for others. So I turn to the Lord time and time again and submit to his plan. So I was at dinner about a month ago with a friend, and he asked me, "Christy, when are you going to come to Haiti with me? When are you just going to move to Haiti with me?" And that would have been an offer 6 months ago that it would have hurt to refuse. But I sat there with complete confidence and peace, telling him that this is exactly where I'm supposed to be right now. Minneapolis is exactly where God wants me. And there's a newfound joy that I have obtained from following God's plan and following Jesus right here in Minneapolis that I wouldn't have otherwise received. My name is Christy, and I bought the field.
In 1993, my mother was diagnosed with oral cancer and endured 12 surgeries following the next 8 years until she died in 2001. Toward the end of her life, she made a statement that has stuck with me today. And that statement, we were riding the elevator down after the doctor, her surgeon, had told her that the cancer was back and that it had moved into her lungs. And we're riding down the elevator, and it's just she and I. And she looked at me and she said, "Brad, where do you go when what is killing you is living inside of you?" That statement would return to me 3 years later when I was in my second treatment for alcoholism. And I was told that what I have is a primary, progressive, and fatal brain disorder. I said to the counselor, I said, "You mean it's in my brain?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "You mean I have it even when I'm not drinking?" He said, "Yes." I said, "It's not curable?" "No." "Well, that's not good news." "No, it's not." I said, "I don't feel safe." And he said, "You shouldn't, because you aren't." That's why I love Lent so much, because Lent is God answering my mother's question by saying, "No, you are not safe. You are dying. In fact, believing in me is not even safe." He's saying, "They're right. You know, your diagnosis is true." You know, we began tonight with ashes, and ashes to me confirm my diagnosis. They allow me to accept that I am mortal, and that believing in God isn't about being safe anymore. That my faith in Christ is now about following him into the wilderness, like Jesus went into the wilderness, where he wasn't safe. And it's a call for me to go away from my need to be safe and to deny my own dying and to know that I can follow him into the wilderness, not into greater safety, but into greater uncertainty. That this journey of Lent is an invitation for me to go from my need to be safe to this wonderful thing we call faith, to know that Christ calls me from the life I love here to a greater life that is eternal, that is mysterious, and that is that wilderness we call faith. My name is Brad, and I bought the field.